Okay, so thanks for the invitation, and so let me get started. We had already some talks about second main theorem, so maybe first I would like to discuss a little bit what this is about. So more or less, this talk is about not about how to get a second main theorem, but rather how to use a second main theorem in order to deduce some consequences. So what is this about? So the second main theorem tells you something that if you have an holomorphic map into some projective space, it tells you something about the, so this would be the growth related to C1D, and it tells you how this is related to NFRD, which is this is the growth determined by counting the intersection of the image and the divisor. And so the basic idea is that you can get the characteristic function just by integrating over t, and here you integrate over the discus radius t, the pullback of this one form or just any volume form. And the idea is that you should get more or less the same thing. And here important point is, if the first time you see something like a second main theorem, it strikes you as a very technical point that you have this counting function and a variant of this counting function, which then is often denoted by something like that, and this, which is the counting function, this truncation. So that means you ignore multiplicities. But here there are a lot of variants, of course. Either you could ignore them completely in the case one, and but we have also seen in some other talks variants where you simply would ignore multiplicities above a certain threshold. Now, in any case, these kind of theorems now give you statements about properties of holomorphic maps from C to X, and what you want to understand is also, you want to understand, given a complex algebraic variety, under which circumstances does there exist a holomorphic map from C to X, which is algebraically non-degenerate? And algebraically non-degenerate, this just means that if you take the closure in the Zariski topology, then this should be the total space. So this is somewhat important goal for me. To understand this, and in order to understand this qualitative statement, one way is to use quantitative statements like second main theorems about manifolds in order then to deduce what happens here. And this is what I want to do. The program is we have already seen frequently some talks that the second main theorem in general for arbitrary target manifolds is today only conjecture, where one has the hope that one day maybe one could prove it. But it is really known to be true only for special manifolds. So there's one second main theorem which I was obtained by Noguchi, Yamanoi, and myself, which is about maps into semi-abelian varieties. And semi-abelian variety is a variety which is constructed out of torus and copies of C star. So you could say this is just an extension of copies of C star. So you, one way to define such a thing is the following: you say it is a compact, it's a complex commutative Lie group which fits into a short exact sequence of this form, that you have copies of the multiplicative group here, and here you have a compact complex torus. This is one way to define a semi-abelian variety. An equivalent but somewhat different way would be to say that this is just an algebraic group which holomorphically can be written as a quotient of a complex vector space group divided by some discrete subgroup, where this discrete subgroup should have the property that it generates this space as a complex vector space. You see over here, if you take a compact torus, then this discrete subgroup must be co-compact, and in fact it will even generate the space as a real vector space, so even the more it will generate the space as a complex vector space. And also in the case where you have C star is simply C star is just C divided by the integers. So again, in this case also you can write it in this way, and this is maybe useful general definition. Okay, so why can you prove something in this case what you cannot prove in the general case? The answer is simply that because of the Lie group structure, you have a trivialization of the tangent bundle. And if the tangent bundle is trivial, then you can it's more easy to deal with derivatives, and then you can prove more easily theorems like that. And basically the theorem is simply here that if you have a holomorphic map from C to A and you have a divisor inside, algebraic, then the counting function, so the characteristic function is really exactly just the counting function. So I don't want to go into technical details, so I just don't really write it precisely, but rather say that this is up to small terms, this is really the same thing. And now I want to use this in order to study this question, under which conditions there exists a non-degenerate holomorphic map from C into the manifold. For a semi-abelian variety itself, this question is of course not interesting, because semi-abelian variety has the complex vector space as universal covering, so obviously there are lots of holomorphic maps from C into the space. But you can use this second main theorem to get answers for to answer these questions for varieties which are closely related to semi-abelian varieties. So the idea is now to consider algebraic varieties with a map to a semi-abelian variety. So if I have a holomorphic map to some semi-abelian variety, and now I want to understand whether or not there exists some holomorphic map into this variety, this non-degenerate image, then I can consider first this entire curve in V, then this map here, let's call it P, and then I can consider the composition. And for the composed map, now I have the second main theorem, and the second main theorem gives me some information, and I can try to exploit this information to get some answers here. Okay, so one needs to understand under which circumstances do you have such interesting maps. And for this, one has the theory of the Sprache of the quasi Albanese variety. So this is a theory which was first developed for compact manifolds, where you have the Albanese variety, and but it generalizes easily. Well, not easily, but using the Hodge theoretic results of Deligne and so on, you can actually generalize this theory to the. It has been generalized by people like Itaka to the case where you consider a non-compact algebraic variety. So let me explain a little bit how this works. Well, first, in the compact case, the Albanese variety. One way to construct the Albanese variety is the following. You look at holomorphic one forms on X. And then you would like to map a point towards the integral from some arbitrary base point until this point P. The idea to construct the Albanese is this, that you just each point in X is mapped onto integrals which arise in this way. But of course these integrals are not unique, because I've just only specified where to start and where to end, and of course there's a choice of which way to take. And so one has to divide through all problematic stuff, and in fact if you see, you can see that this is really this is now associating a linear form to the on the space of one form, then you have to divide by something like H one X Z. And Hodge theory tells you that this really makes sense. So for instance, it is right from the definition not obvious, and for non-Kähler manifolds also not true, that you get here something discrete which you can really divide through. So, but using Hodge theory, everything it works fine for the Kähler case. In the non-compact case, everything which is somewhat related to Hodge theory and works for compact Kähler manifolds can be and mostly be generalized to the case where you have a manifold which you can realize as a compact manifold minus some divisor. Because every algebraic variety actually you can realize in this form, you just compactify it in some way and then you blow up what you have added at the boundary in order to get a divisor on this side. So every algebraic manifold can be written in this way. And if you do this, then you can do more or less the same thing as above by considering the so-called logarithmic differential forms. So, let us say, one should think these are differential forms on the compactification, where you have some poles in a very controlled way along the divisor. So, and you can really make a precise definition in such a way that you really the theory can be transferred. In particular, you can make then the same construction with the logarithmic one forms instead of the normal one forms. And you get something which is called the quasi-Albanese. And because everything is no longer compact here, it is not a surprise that in general this will be not an Abelian variety, but it can be a rather semi-Abelian variety. But this is one point of view, that you constructed explicitly these things by taking quotients of dual spaces of one forms by some homology groups, but maybe a more useful point of view would be that you say you have we can also characterize these things by universality properties. So the universality property of the quasi-Albanese is precisely that if you have any map to the semi-abelian variety, then in a unique way it fibers through the quasi-Albanese. And so this is a crucial property, and in the compact case it would be the property that every map to a Albanian variety, or if you regard also non-algebraic, then you would say any map to a compact complex torus really goes through the Albanese. So in this way, actually the quasi-Albanese, if you know the quasi-Albanese, you really know what are there for maps to semi-Abelian varieties. So in order to use this approach here, that you study the variety by studying maps from the variety to semi-Abelian varieties, you not have to consider all possible semi-Abelian varieties, but you just have to consider the quasi-Albanese variety. And so this idea now takes the form that you this was a problematic one. Well, if I would write really fast and you would read really fast, then maybe I could use it. There you should be a little bit careful, yeah. I think. Yeah. Well, yes, of course, I mean, in the case where you have something really compact here, then you have the advantage that every rational map to an Albanian variety is already regular, yeah. Okay, I wanted to say, in order to study these holomorphic maps, you can now study what happens to the quasi-Albanese. And of course, this approach is useful only if you get something here. For instance, if you take the projective N space, then the quasi-Albanese is evidently trivial, so this would not be very useful. And so here now comes in the so-called logarithmic irregularity. Well, I'm not so sure that I really like this name, but so this is the dimension. You could say this is just the dimension of the quasi-Albanese. And in the title, it was referred to surfaces of high logarithmic irregularity. And so the topic of the talk is actually the case where the dimension of this one is at least as large as the dimension of X. So we want to understand what happens in this case. I guess I'm missing somewhat a little bit. Break longer for the lunch. Before going to Bayreuth, I was actually staying some time in France, and so I got more of a French habit of. I assumed this to take a little bit more time for the lunch break. But anyway, I think I will succeed. And if this chalk runs away here, some more. So, I have to a little bit continue the study of this map to the quasi-Albanese. This map is just now an algebraic map, so it could be actually a little bit complicated. In particular, The image could be something strange. So actually the image is usually only a constructible set. So it could be that this is not surjective, it could be that this is not even open, and it could be strange. And also, it's not, the image, for instance, is not necessarily closed. I mean, most people are probably more familiar with the compact situation. In the compact situation, clearly the image, because everything's proper, is a closed analytic subset of the Ibanez variety. Here, this is not necessarily the case. For example, if you just take an elliptic curve and you take the elliptic curve minus a point, then actually just the usual embedding here will be the quasi-Ibanez. And so the image in the quasi-Ibanez will not be closed, but rather it will be an open set which misses one point. Okay, and this actually really makes the situation a little bit more complicated. So, I will mainly concentrate now on the case of surfaces. Also, at least some of what I tell you will be valid in higher dimensions. And in the surface case, will state a little bit more what is the goal somewhat. The goal is, of course, to relate this property that exists, a non-degenerate entire curve, to something, algebraic geometric properties of the variety. And now there are a couple of conjectures. So the first conjecture would be that you don't have a non-degenerate entire curve if you have something of general type. So the first conjecture is it does not exist. F C to X, if X is of logarithmic general type. Yes. Okay. And more general, then there is a conjecture by Campanas, then you have such a non-degenerate thing if and only if X is special. And, well, this is all related to the Kodaira dimension or the canonical bundle. But so now an idea is to really take the case of surfaces and to check whether these conjectures are true, because could hope that if the case of the surfaces, at least if you have a large quasi-Ibanez, that in this case you really can prove that it's okay. And maybe the first side I want to mention then is Bloch, Ochiai, Noguchi tell you that it's okay if the dimension of the quasi-Ibanez is larger than the dimension of the image of X inside the quasi-Ibanez. So if the map onto the quasi-Ibanez is not surjective, not dominant, if this map is not dominant, so alpha is the map from X to the quasi-Ibanez, so if this map is not dominant, then actually it is okay. You have this property, first of all, that does not exist in a non-degenerate curve, and also it's clear that it will not be special. You will maybe tomorrow learn in more detail what is special, but for the time being, I just want to tell what's necessary. So this is somewhat the first case, and the next case is then to discuss what happens here if you have. The next case would be where actually the map from X to the quasi-Ibanez is dominant. So in other words, if you take the image and you take the closure, you get everything. After taking the closure, of course, because it is not necessarily closed, as already mentioned. And the easiest case here is where you really have the same dimension. So let us assume that this is generically bijective. and no, this is not what I want to say. Let's first assume that it's generically finite. Well, this is then the next case, and this is the case where actually it turns out that using the second main theorem one can really get an answer. I will now explain it for surfaces, but basically it should work more general. So let us consider the situation. Here's the surface, and now the quasi-Albanese is a semi-abelian surface. And you have a map from C into X. Then the first step is, well, maybe I don't. So, well, no, maybe. Maybe I should rather add some more his remark about this, that together this Noguchi and Yamanoi, I more or less started this for this case where alpha, so this was 0.7 or 0.6 or I don't know. Maybe let's say 0.7. For the case where alpha x to the quasi-Albanese is actually proper. So this is, in fact, a rather special case. So this was the first case to be studied, and the answer is, if it is proper, then more or less the answer is that there exists such a map, if and only if alpha is unramified. I mean, this is slightly simplified. Yes. Yes, I always write it. I mean, you for every x you have the constant map. So if you if I write down this, you should realize that I don't want to talk about constant maps, and also not about maps which are degenerate. Okay, and then Detloff and Lu studied the case. Well, it's a little bit complicated to say what's the, I don't want to completely describe this case, but basically it was related to the condition that the image inside here is open. So so they had a special condition, and this implied in particular that the image is open. But, well, it was a little bit technical, the condition, so I don't want to repeat it. Anyway, but I would want to at least mention that there is some result in this here. And in this paper, there's also a generalization of a result of Kawamata, which is also important here to really do with this case. What? In the second case?
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to give it because no, because actually I will give a complete answer,
okay,
which includes this case. So, so maybe first I want to explain a little bit the technique. So, how can constructible sets look like? So, constructible sets would look like the following. Here you have a surface, and then you remove a curve, but then you add back one point. So you could have a surface minus a curve plus some point. And this could be the quasi-Albanese of a surface. And if this is the quasi-Albanese of a surface, then the question is, what can you say about curves which are now coming from C to X if you compose it? Now, I told you that there is a second main theorem for the semi-abelian varieties, and one can now try to study it. And here you have a divisor, and here you have some sub-variety of codimension. At least two. And the second main theorem and related results tell you now the following thing, that The second main theorem tells you that if you, well, let's call this simply big F, that TF of big F is the same thing as the counting function for D. Well, if you now look here, only this point of the divisor, this is the only point which is actually in the image of X. And so if any point here, if the image of F hits the divisor somewhere, it can hit it only in this one point. And for this reason, actually the counting function for which counts how often you get to D is the same thing as the counting function which counts how often you get to Z. The characteristic function, of course, depends on D. That's important. So in this situation, you have this equivalences. And finally, you know that this is small. So this is on the way to the second main theorem. This is intermediate result, that if you have a subvariety of codimension at least 2, then the counting function is always small for every non-degenerate entire curve. So this follows from this result. And so you get that this one is small. So the conclusion now is T of F is small. And this implies that the divisor in some sense is small. Namely, it implies that the divisor is, in particular, it implies that the divisor is not ample. But actually, it implies much more. It implies that if you look at this map F, well, you can, if you think of this guy here as a product, you can write it in two components. And now this statement is that if you measure the growth of this function with respect to the divisor, you just measure this component. And this is being small means that F1 is of much smaller growth than F2. And so we have a very special situation in this case. And so actually, the second main theorem really tells you that if you have such a really constructible set as the image, then the existence of a non-degenerate entire curve really puts a lot of conditions on D. So D in particular is not ample. And in fact, it turns out that, here in surface case it's clear, it's not ample, then it's really just actually an orbit of a one-dimensional subgroup. But here you can actually also, well, maybe I'll just leave it as at the moment concerning the methods, and rather I want to state now, maybe formulate what is really the precise result. So the precise result is the following. So let X be an algebraic surface. This generalizes to higher dimensions, but I just put it in the surface case. So algebraic surface means algebraic variety, but not necessarily compact. And this should be, quasi-Albanese. Then there exists a map from C to X, non-degenerate, so algebraically non-degenerate holomorphic curve, if and only if the following conditions are fulfilled. I missed one assumption, of course. The assumption is that the quasi-Albanese is indeed as large as, at least as large as the dimension of X. And so we have a couple of conditions here. The first condition is that alpha must be generically 1-to-1. So actually, these are more or less two conditions. The first condition is that it's generically finite, which follows from this result of Noguchi, Bloch, Ochiai. And the second one is that it is really, if generically finite, in fact, generically 1-to-1. This basically follows from this result which we had about the special case where we have a proper map here, together with the universality of the semi-Abelian. Okay, and there comes now more conditions. The second condition is that, we need now to really describe the image. So here I assume that it's generically 1-to-1, so the image is actually dense. And now I could say let D be the union of a one-dimensional component of the closure of this, the quasi-Abelianism, maybe I abbreviate this A, of A minus alpha X. So I look at the complement of the image. This would be here just this divisor minus this point, and it takes the closure. And I take only the one-dimensional components. The components are all zero or one-dimensional because we are in a surface case. And the zero-dimensional components do not matter. They are just too small to really have any consequence. So the condition is now that D must be a union of orbits of, complexly subgroup, or algebraic, we could say, of an algebraic subgroup, algebraic one-dimensional subgroup S inside of A. So this is the second condition, that in fact these divisorial components must all be orbits of one fixed one-dimensional subgroup. Which means in particular if the quasi-Albanese, for instance, happens to be a simple Abelian variety, then actually this condition is that here simply must not be any one-dimensional components. Okay, the third condition is that none of these orbits is going to be removed completely. Because if we really want a non-degenerate course which goes through here, we must somewhere pass through this. Otherwise, actually we would, here, we actually can get a projection onto something which is a one-dimensional semi-Abelian variety, for instance an elliptic curve minus 1 point, and if the curve minus 1 point is hyperbolic, the star minus 1 point is also hyperbolic, so we must somewhere pass through this thing. So actually alpha x, so this must intersect each component of D. So this is next condition. And now there's coming a fourth condition. The fourth condition is now, again, maybe I can explain it. This is aided by this picture. So the fourth condition is something like the following. If you look at the projection here, now this group, you can actually divide by this group. And here you have the projection. And the second main theorem, as I stated, is that TFRC1D is more or less the same thing as one as a truncated counting function. Now, what does it mean that it's the same as a truncated counting function? It means that you can control the, you get already the complete information about the cross if you simply count the intersections ignoring multiplicities. And this means, in turn, that multiplicity 2 and 3 and larger occur only very rarely. So at most points, you just have multiplicity 1, and multiplicity 2 and larger is so rare that you can simply ignore it. The statement that you can, this truncated SMT tells you you can ignore multiplicities, And this just means that multiplicities are very rare. This means in particular, if you look at the composed map, now from Ski to this guy here, when you hit this point, it must mostly happen with multiplicity 1. It cannot always happen with high multiplicities. And this, of course, means that there's some condition on this variety. In order to enable this, you really need that here you have some point which is goes mapped onto this point, and where you have a non-trivial tangent vector which goes to some non-trivial tangent vector here. So this is necessary in order to be compatible with this truncated thing. So that would be the fourth condition. For each point now in D divided by S, there exists there exists a representative of this point, and then there exists a pre-image in X such that P tilde should represent this P, and there should exist a tangent vector at Q. Well, at Q should be mapped to P, and this image of this, I need some notation. So maybe I should write this as got mapped onto let's say beta upper star V in T P aim divided by S. And the crucial point is you need a vector with a property that this vector is not zero. So that's the precise condition. For each component of D, you need at least one point inside, which occurs as the image of a point in X, and where actually you also have a tangent vector which goes to some non-zero tangent vector. And so these four conditions together really give you necessary and sufficient conditions for the existence of a non-degenerate entire curve. Now, so far, this is carefully checked. What is not so carefully checked is that this is equivalent to X is not special. Yes? Yeah. Yes. It's quite possible that you have one orbit here, and you have not just one point, but you have several points. And I need the non-trivial tangent vector in just one of these points. It's not necessary for everyone. Okay, and for instance, this special means that you look at maps to varieties of general type, and you not look just at varieties which are of general type in the usual sense, but you also look at multiplicities. And this condition about this tangent vector, that there exists a non-zero one here. This basically means that if you look at this point and look at the pre-image in X of this one point will be some curve which could be reducible. And the condition is now that the multiplicities, they are not allowed to be always higher than 1. There must be at least one component which has multiplicity 1. And this is precisely what occurs in this orbifold definition of general type. So, as I said, this is, I would not completely guarantee this, but I'm rather sure that this is okay. So this is still, more or less work in progress, the last statement, you should say.
To get the non-degenerate map in the tree, you just basically take a non-degenerate map to the Avogadro variety, and then these conditions allow you to go backwards?
Yes. Okay. So, well, basically, you look, well, here's this picture that you have, here's this, is this surface X, then you have this quasi-Albanese, and then you have the projection, and you start with constructing the map downstairs here. You can just take more or less everything, and then you use interpolation techniques to get something upstairs here. And you also use this last condition to finally lift up everything up there. So this is really, well, it's possible to then, the one direction comes basically from the second main theorem. Most of the arguments here to prove that these conditions are necessary in sufficiency is really going this way through the picture. Okay, maybe I say, I want now to say a little bit about Prudnikov. So if you study this question, whether there exists a non-degenerate entire curve or just whether there exists a non-constant entire curve, then the notion of the Brody curve is also often very important. So let me record what does that mean. The Brody curve is mapped from C to X. On X you should fix some Hermitian metric. And you want that simply the derivative should be bounded. So Brody curve is a, well, maybe non-constant one where the derivative is bounded. So the derivative you can calculate in each point. In each point it's a map from the tangent space to the tangent space. So you need to really calculate the size of this. You need to fix some metrics here. And you fix the Euclidean normal metric on the complex line. And you fix something here. And it is very useful, this notion, in the case if X is compact. So if X is compact, then you don't have to choose anything. Because in the case of compactness, they are all equivalent. So for a compact complex manifold, the notion of the Brody curve is well defined. But the problem is a little bit for a non-compact case. It is not so clear what should, actually it's not even completely clear for me what should be the best reasonable definition. But the key fact why these curves are important is that if you have X a compact complex manifold, then Brody proved there exists a non-constant holomorphic map to X if and only if you can find actually a holomorphic map from C to X which has a bounded derivative. And so this is of course something which can be very useful, because the existence of arbitrary non-constant holomorphic maps are now related to some non-constant holomorphic maps which have very, very special properties. Okay, and if you have a non-compact manifold, then of course you can take a compactification and take a Hermitian metric of the compactification. But the problem is that then the notion becomes dependent on the compactification. Anyway, one can do this, and then do I want to do this? Maybe not. Maybe I just want to state that I checked also in some cases for the surfaces here. What are the conditions for finding some Brody curves? And one thing I got is a very strange, this is a kind of strange characterization, which also implies that it's the following strange example. So the statement is the following: there exists a deformation family. So just have, we have just a family of holomorphic curves over the upper half plane. And so all these points are in fact surfaces, compact ones. And now I look at which of these surfaces have the property that there exists a non-degenerate Brody curve. And so the fact is here that the set of T for which XT admits a non-degenerate Brody curve, so you would maybe hope that this is something reasonable, so maybe a union of analytic subsets, or at least closed or something, and it is not at all. So in this example, it is actually the set of all set in the upper half plane. So this is complex numbers now. Well, you have the property that the degree, if you take the rational numbers and you adjoin this element, so this is an element in the upper half plane, so it's a complex number, and you adjoin it to the field of rational numbers, and you get some larger field. And this, the extension to Q should be of degree larger than 2. So this is something which is really, you start with this notion of Brody curves, which is just a Hermitian matrix, and so on, and you end up here with some set which is defined in a very arithmetic way. Okay. Yes.
Is this the same type where you have any kind of non-degenerate?
No, then actually, no, I don't know such an example. Actually, they all admit non-degenerate entire curves. So the example is not so hard to describe. It's easy to describe. So I will just now describe how it works. So you are just doing the following. This XT is nothing else than the blow up of... oh yes, yeah.
Yeah.
right. It's inside of the bracket, so it's okay. That's right. Okay, so I just do the following. I just blow up a product of elliptic curves, and these are just elliptic curves corresponding to this element in the upper half plane. So I just take, for each element in the upper half plane, I take the corresponding elliptic curve, and it takes the product with itself, and I consider the blow up just say at the origin. And that's it.
So this is going to come down to complex multiplication or something.
Yes, exactly. So the statement here that there exists a non-degenerate Brody curve, this is now equivalent to the statement that there exists let's formulate it this way, C to E times E. This is a complex one-parameter group. Which has a closure which is of real dimension 3. So the existence of a non-degenerate Brody curve depends on the fact that inside of this torus, which is a real four-dimensional and complex two-dimensional, you can find a complex one-dimensional subgroup, which is not closed and whose closure is exact, has real dimension 3. And this, in turn, is equivalent to the property that ET has complex multiplication. No, has not complex multiplication. So, wait a minute. Right. It's correct on the other side. So this has no complex multiplication. And that's the same thing as what I stated over there, that degree of QT is actually over Q is at least 2. So these statements are all equivalent. Well, okay, so right. So in fact, in this case, these Brody curves will come from this complex one-parameter group. So they have a topological closure which is real three-dimensional. So they are not topologically dense. They are just dense in the Tversky topology. Okay. Then I stop here.